Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Absolutely emphatic.
And Jay DeMeritt. Oh, yes. Luka Plesic. That's a spectacular goal.
And Helgeson comes in first. Oh, it's a goal.
And a goal. Sensational.
Welcome back to the Watford Buzz podcast. Just like the Championship, we took an international break as well. Maybe slightly too long, but we're here now. My name is Matt Messiano, and I'm joined by Jordan Weimer and Tom Budell. As we always, guys, let's start just by finding out how we all are. How was your international break, Jordan?
International breaks are weird. I feel like it just is a time warp where it doesn't feel right at all, and it's good to be back. So then back with a quick flurry of two games. So yeah, lots to talk about. Looking forward to it though.
Nice. Tom, did you watch any international football at all?
Funnily enough, I did actually. I went to the England game against North Macedonia. That's how tuned in I was. I totally forgot who it was against. And then, no, that's wrong. Sorry, that was in Macedonia. I saw England labour to a win against somebody at Wembley.
I've got to say, that's commitment, Tom.
Yeah, no. The guy I went with went to Macedonia with his wife. I watched some of the Macedonia game, which was just... Oof. I don't love international football, I must admit.
Yeah, clearly. You don't know what you've been watching.
Yeah. Mate, honestly, it's so bad. There's a former colleague, friend of mine, Dave, great guy, and he goes to every England game, him and his wife and a good mate of his. But because of that, they have to go, otherwise they lose their kind of priority. And so I regularly get tickets from him, and I couldn't tell you the games I've been to, the teams I've seen, because I just can't remember. I usually turn up and go, so is this a friendly or a qualifier? That's my attitude. All my commitment is with Watford.
Well, they don't do friendlies now, do they? If it's not a qualifier, it's a national... What is it called? Is it National League or...
Nations League.
Nations League, that's it.
Every game is such a commitment. Like, that's such an unfathomable commitment to me.
Really is.
Every England game in particular is insane. Anyway, credit to him and his wife and his friend. Third wheeling to North Macedonia is not on the top of my list either, to be honest with you.
No, definitely not.
Okay. Some players had a good international experience, even if you guys didn't. Ismaël Koné, for one, but we'll talk about him more later. Let's start by just mentioning how absolutely crazy that game was yesterday. In the little notes you've got for us here, Tom, you've put in bonkers, and I think that's bang on, to be honest, because it could have been a completely different chat had things changed in a different way, but it played out the way it did, and I think we're probably all relatively happy, if not, you know, like wondering what exactly took place. But yeah, what's your main thoughts about Norwich?
Yeah, it could have been very different, couldn't it? After 12 minutes, you thought, oh God, I've seen this game before. Set piece goal, screamer out of nothing where we've kind of created it for them. And we just couldn't get a foothold in the game at all. And then suddenly, it was like a switch flicks. I don't know if it was as simple as Hwang going off and Ashley Barnes coming on, who I fully expected to do a number on us and score and just generally shithouse his way through the rest of the game. David Wagner said afterwards that taking Hwang off surprised them, that his own players. And it's kind of hard to separate the two, because I think from that moment on the momentum shifted a little bit and we got back into it. But yeah, a hugely important win, because we got this kind of pretty horrific run of fixtures now, haven't we? And back-to-back losses after that, six unbeaten, suddenly it doesn't take much to, if it all feels very fragile, it doesn't take much for the mood to change entirely, and you suspect it would have if we hadn't have turned that one around.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably not too much more to add than what Tom just said there in terms of overall. You know, it was, what I will say is it had that feeling of the last Norwich game where it's kind of real, just a quick flurry of goals and just like suddenly you're in such a difficult position. But on the other hand, I think that was the worst Norwich team I've seen in a long time. The whole Wagner experiment at Norwich always seemed destined to look like this, and it's honestly shocking that they kind of went in this direction, because I thought they were awful last night. Not to take away from the fact we were able to come back, because obviously they started relatively positively, but they were really... Is that the worst Norwich team we've seen for a long time at Vicarage Road? It's got to be up there, isn't it?
Certainly felt it. I mean, last time they came, they knocked us on our arse, yeah. Didn't they? No, they came down with us, didn't they? I was just trying to remember the game where Ranieri got sacked. We lost 3-0 and Josh Sargent scored the greatest goal that's ever been seen.
Yeah.
That was too... That was pretty miserable.
They just looked good. Maybe it's because I kind of grew up not far from Norwich for a long time, so I've got quite a few Norwich friends that are fans, but I mean, I normally associate them with such a different style of football, and they just really looked like a team that had a defensive partnership with Danny Bath and Shane Duffy. That was kind of my main takeaway from it, but yeah, you know, it was a tough one, and as Tom said as well, you know, and I think you said on Twitter too, that's a game that we could have easily lost and never would have come back into on many occasions. So the fact that we're able to turn it around is obviously, I mean, apart from the kind of obvious of it being a positive, there's at least some character being shown and a little bit of entertainment for the fans too.
Yeah, we did have to turn it around though, and that was because we started very poorly. The first 12 minutes, I think several Watford fans were considering going home early. It was that bad to start with.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was. And actually, there's one thing in terms of bringing up that Leicester game real quick. Before we get onto that goal, obviously one of the big changes was Dan Backman out, Ben Hamer in. Should we speak on that real quick if we get too far away?
Yeah, sure, okay.
Yeah, so I guess initial thoughts
on which point?
What do we make of the Backman situation? Because that was one of the more controversial and bigger talking points of that Leicester game, aside from the result, was the situation revolving around Dan Backman, which I feel like we talk about every single week as Dan Backman segment.
There's always something said, isn't there? Dan Backman, what a week. It's sensational. His stock has never been lower after Saturday, and yet his stock has never been higher after Tuesday, because the alternative has, you know, kind of had a bit of a hold my beer moment, hasn't he? You know, I think you have to separate the two things, right? I think Daniel Backman probably makes saves that, in terms of discipline and goalkeeping, if we park the discipline for a moment, I will come back to it, because it's obviously a very important part of this debate. If you look at the goalkeeping, I think he makes saves that maybe he wouldn't be expected to make, shouldn't make, and then he lets in goals that he should be expected to save. But I don't think Ben Hamer has ever covered himself in glory when he's come in, and last night was the kind of pits of that, was the low point of that. Obviously, the goal that I realise I'm now going off on a Ben Hamer tangent when I said I'd talk about Backman. The big one is obviously the Huang goal, exactly, that Porteous gives the ball away for, but I still think Ben Hamer has to do better. In terms of Backman, as I say, I think he walks back into that team. Whether or not he walks back into the team as captain or not is another matter altogether, and obviously Ishmael has said that there might have to be a discussion there. I will put my hands up now, because I think I have to, and say I spoke about and wrote about the situation when he was made captain in the summer. I didn't see an issue with it, but I think I've been proven spectacularly and wholly wrong. I still think goalkeepers can be captains. I still think it's important to have more leaders in the team than one kind of outstanding captain. If he is going to put us in a situation where he's picking up stupid bookings and getting suspended, picking up stupid bookings and getting sent off, then purely because of his propensity for getting in the face of the officials and losing his cool and whatnot, then that's a problem. You know, it's a funny one, isn't it? On one hand, he's quite an unpopular bloke and I think most people would like to see him replaced, but on the other hand, as I just said, we kind of need him in the team, because the deputy is certainly no better and probably considerably weaker. So
for the time being, while we're stuck with him, which I think we probably are because they've given him this contract and whatnot, I think he's still in a fairly strong position. He needs to be available. And I think we're kind of making a rod for our own back by giving him the armband and giving him the mandate to go and be the one that speaks to the officials. So yeah, I'm quite prepared to say that I think I got this one wrong.
What do you make of the comments from Ismail saying about regarding that it was maybe a potential issue with the fact that he's a goalkeeper rather than his conduct, more the fact that he has to kind of run up to the halfway line to have a conversation with the referee? Yeah.
I think it was clever. I think that was the delicate way of handling it, right? I think we've all seen over the last couple of years, and we can pick the games out explicitly, Huddersfield being one of them and this being another one. We've seen, you know, these games where he just kind of loses his mind. But he would do that regardless of whether he's captain. But it's the kind of putting ourselves in the situation to make that an issue, that he is the one that has the opportunity and mandate to go and speak to the officials. I thought something else that was interesting that came out of those quotes from Ismail was that we kind of, and I didn't know this was the case, but we kind of nominate a couple of players that can speak to the officials. It doesn't have to necessarily be the captain. You just think, well, that's the workaround. But, you know, clearly Batman, and we want to see players, right, that care and give their all. But I think there's a controlled and sensible and smart way to do that. And he has shown more than once now that he lets his emotions get the better of him. I think it's been handled quite delicately, but he also has to get it right, because you can't lose the player, can you, and kind of lose respect and lose face in all of this. I would say if there's going to be a change, it needs to be the right change rather than change for change's sake.
Can I say, just insert question here, Ismail made Backman the captain, right? He wasn't captain before Ismail came in. I just want to clarify that.
Correct.
That was Ismail's decision. So I mean, he knows Backman plays in goal, right?
Yeah, I mean,
he knew this would be an issue. Surely he knew this would be an issue.
I think it's a soft excuse to try and justify the potential change in mind. I think, you know, there's a big difference between running up from your goal to the halfway line to speak to the referee and have a conversation, and between that and, you know, running up to the halfway line with your hand stretched out, shouting in the ref's face, which is, you know, kind of what we see more often than not with Backman. He's not the most controlled in his communication with the referees, as he's, you know, comes across as a bit whiny at times.
No, I'm pretty sure Ben Foster was made captain a few times during his tenure with us, and I don't remember many people getting particularly angry with him.
No, I mean, it's how you conduct yourself, isn't it? And there's a long history. I mean, I understand. I think it is a genuine factor. I think it is a factor in terms of, you know, are you able to have that consistent communication? But there's a long history of successful captains as goalkeepers, and not just that. You can debate the success of them, but at least there's a lot of goalkeepers that have been captain and not been sent off. I know he wasn't straight sent off or anything, but getting booked for dissent as a goalkeeper is always a risk, because you know that at any point there could be an opportunity where you are going to have to take a yellow. So, same as a centre-back, you avoid those yellows at all costs, especially the petty ones are kind of extra painful. So, you know, you expect more, and it's something that hasn't really... I think when we talked about him being captain, one of the hopes was he'd be one of those players that you elevate their performance by giving them that responsibility. You elevate the kind of the way they carry themselves and they kind of grow into that captaincy. But, you know, so far it kind of just feels like we've almost given him more of a platform to continue his kind of slightly naive, immature behaviour in some ways. Not, I don't want to just sound like I'm trying to bash Backman again, but it's just a little frustrating to watch.
What did you make of Hamer's performance then as a whole?
Himself, as I said, kind of many favours, particularly as otherwise there weren't that many saves to make, were there? There was one at the kind of near post in second half where it kind of was shot straight at him and he saved it. He kind of had a bit of a flap, a bit of a poor punch towards the end, I think, kind of fairly late on, wasn't there? Hamer punch and has to push over the half volley from their number seven, you know. But you can't get away from the fact, I actually thought the first goal he might have done better, we can discuss that in a moment, but you know, certainly the second one, although he's stitched up something chronic by Porteous and he's already off his line, it is straight down his throat, and I appreciate the ball's moving and it's going at some speed and what have you, but I think for argument's sake Backman probably pushes that one over the bar. I just can't see him letting that one in. And the first one, again, he's not helped by the fact there are eight men in the box, none of whom managed to get anywhere near Danny Bart. and three Norwich players are surrounding him, but he looks like he doesn't really either get his feet right or something to give himself the best chance to react. You know, it almost looks a bit delayed. It almost looks a bit late. And yeah, it's tricky. I don't want to. I'm clearly not the best judge of goalkeepers because I've been team backman until this point, and while the whole world's kind of saying otherwise. But yeah, I didn't think it was a good game from Hamer, and I felt both goals were preventable.
Yeah, I think the goal is fair. You know, I think it was a really good strike, and it was taken kind of a bit unexpectedly. So he was kind of a little bit more advanced in his line. But I think, you know, you could definitely argue he should have done better. I think that's fair. And perhaps probably Backman would have done. I think after the goals, I thought he was fine. He made a couple of good saves in the box. I thought he was fine after that. He made a couple of good claims too. I think it was relatively steady. But, you know, I think most people will be looking at that goal, which I think is still justified. You know, he's not been kind of, I think every performance he's really had, there's been some error that's been a little bit frustrating, even if the rest of the game has been fairly solid. But yeah, no, I guess that's kind of really where we are with Hamer. And it's not unexpected. Look, generally the backup goalkeeper is not as good as a starter. So, you know, we've got to be looking at that position group at the starting position, and you're not really expecting Hamer to play that much. But, you know, that plays into what we're talking about with Dan Backman. He needs to be available as much as possible.
That's fair. I think it's right of you to highlight the fact that he had a reasonably good second half, though, Jordan, because I think he probably saved us a bit at the end there as well. It could have easily been a draw that game.
I'm trying to think of the shot. There was one at the near post where he was kind of down on his knee and his arm kind of flicked up to make a save at the near post. Do you remember that one in the second half? Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, he made some key saves in the second half, and he will get labelled as being poor just because of that. That goal that he conceded, which I think, to be fair, as a goalkeeper, when I'm faced with that kind of a shot and it's swerving, and I don't know, I don't like him. And yes, you can say Backman probably would have saved that because shot stopping is his forte. That's what he's good at. From long range, he is very, very good. And you know, some goalkeepers won't be as good as that. And yeah, maybe he made a mistake there, but he did other good things in the game. So I think it's right to point those out as well. On the whole, though, I think we agree Backman is a better keeper. We just need him to be a bit more level-headed, calmer, and maybe have the duties of the captain, not necessarily the captaincy itself, just removed from him, so he doesn't have to worry about getting involved in those kinds of decisions, and he can focus on just controlling his back four, really, or you know, that kind of a thing.
For sure. And in terms of kind of obviously talk about goalkeeper, but obviously I think that one of the big talking points is instantly going to be from this Norwich game, set pieces back to haunt us again. Not really a Hamer issue here necessarily, but yeah, what's the thought on the set piece? Another awful one to concede. It really felt like it took the wind out of us as well at that point.
Yeah, it did. They flashed up a good stat on Sky fairly shortly after that said we've now conceded 9 set piece goals this season, which is the worst in the league, not a huge surprise in and of itself, and that 41% of the goals we've conceded came from set pieces, which again is the worst in the league. So it's a problem. You look at that, the way they kind of line up, as I said, there's 8 men in the 6-yard box and someone still gets free. Danny Bart, you know, big, good in the air, has a history of being a decent threat from set pieces. It's pretty poor from our perspective. I refuse to believe that it isn't something that can't be improved upon by just drilling the players every training session on it until it is eradicated. I just can't believe that that's something you can't practice makes perfect, and I just can't believe that's something that you can't make perfect, or at least a lot better.
Matt, are you thinking the same?
Yeah, I agree. You kind of spelt it out there, Tom. Yeah, it's something that hopefully can be improved going forward with just more time working on it. Not just defending set pieces either, but you know, when we have set pieces, I don't feel like we're often utilising them to the best of their ability. How many goals have we scored from set pieces this season?
Yeah, and it's a problem, isn't it? And you know, I think it was probably one of the best parts of Norwich's game last night, the fact they did identify that. You know, it's a way to attack a zonal system is by kind of disrupting the zones that they had. And I just look at it now, I think including us, obviously, I think there's 17 players in the 6-yard box when the ball comes in. It makes it very difficult to defend zonally when your zones get compressed. chest, and it creates an extra level of confusion and chaos there. And again, we didn't react. No, it seems to be a kind of a cycle we consistently find ourselves in, where you see that kind of level of flat-footed defending, and you know, we just don't really look like we know how to answer it on the pitch, and it has to be identified and it has to be worked on, because you know, this is a coaching problem. The players obviously have a responsibility, but you can coach around this. We can all see the weakness, we can all see the frailty, and clearly opponents can too. You know, it doesn't take much to look at Watford and think, okay, this is a team we can expose with good delivery, and there's a little bit of work to try and exploit some really bad defending. So yeah, yet again we find ourselves punished, and you know, we won this game 3-2 in the end, but these situations are difference makers for us, and we have to eradicate it, or at least minimize it, because it's way below the standard required at this point. Also, sorry, one last thing on the set piece. Interesting, 17 players in the box, no one on the post, which is also interesting, I thought.
Tom, you mentioned earlier that Porteous was responsible, or at least partly responsible, for the second goal. It was a poor pass, and it felt in that, particularly in that first 12-minute period, we were just giving the ball away far too often.
And that would probably have stopped the goal going in, given it was in the corner, wouldn't it? Or given you a considerably better chance, at least. Regards Porteous, I think we should be giving that serious consideration. Now that that kind of number six position has been filled effectively by Jake Livermore, and Sierra Alta's back to being a centre-half, Hoop seems to be playing fairly well at the moment. So I think, yeah, I would be tempted to stick Sierra Alta in there for Porteous. He's just making, errors of judgment. The passing, as you said early on, for everybody was poor. Even Livermore had one, and he's usually quite tidy in possession. We just seem to be giving it away constantly. He's rash, he's brash, he tears out of the defensive line to do things that he doesn't need to do, gets dragged into things that he doesn't need to, leave space in behind. I still think he's a good player there, right? He was good last season. He tailed off a bit, but he was good for the majority of those sort of 15 or 20 games that he played when he came in. But I would be sorely tempted, now that Sierra Alta's fit. And I still think it's an area where we should be looking to do something in January, because I think we're thin there, when you consider that the next man up is, after those three, is Matty Pollock, who's looked kind of considerably short of the level. And to be honest with you, he's still quite young and still hasn't even played in League One, has he? Kind of had a loan spell in League Two where he did very well. Had a loan spell in Scotland where he did very well, but hasn't, you know, there's kind of skipped a level there, really. So I would be tempted to do something there. Not as a priority necessarily, but if there is the budget.
Yeah. I mean, he came on at the end of the game, didn't he, Matty Pollock? He didn't get too much time, but at least he's still, you know, hanging around the team. But you're right, he needs more minutes. And I don't know, I mean, is the Scottish Premiership not akin to League One? You don't think so? No?
No, I think you see a lot of players from Scotland go into League Two national leagues. But if you exclude the kind of top two or three, maybe Aberdeen as well. I not that I watch any of it. I was about to say much, that's a lie. I watch precisely none of it.
Good. Well, informative as ever, Tom. Right, shall we talk about some happier things? The response at 2-0 down was fantastic. It's exactly the sort of thing that we've been crying out for, and I'm not really sure where it came from, to be honest. It didn't feel like the team was going to go in that direction. So what do you think happened on the pitch there, Jordan?
Well, I think that was a real point of, you have to take stock of what's going on. You make a decision there. Do you kind of just pass on responsibility to your teammates and continue the capitulation, or do you actually kind of have a reaction and try and turn the thing around? Because it was looking bad, wasn't it? But, you know, we did show a real positive reaction, and it was impressive. You know, we looked to dominate the game after that. Whilst we were quite passive beforehand, we were already getting on the ball. You know, we're dominating possession. We started to move things around a little bit. I thought the centre midfielders started to turn it up a gear. Tempo improved. They just looked like a real effort from everyone on that pitch to get us back into it. You know, it took the two goals happening, obviously, but the last 15 or so minutes of that first half, we really upped that pressure. And I think that goal, obviously, gave us that kind of extra little boost we needed, and the second one came, you know, straight after. But it was important because we've seen us have a little bit of a reaction before in a similar manner, where you start to get the ball, you start to kind of work it around, we're going side to side, we're getting it forward a little bit. But if that goal doesn't come, I think we always lose a bit of confidence in our ability to turn it into a turn those kind of moments of possession into a goal. So the fact that we actually got that, you know, I think it gave us that little bit of extra that we needed, and it really started to build in itself. It's a shame it took that long. But that dominance was really impressive, and it was good to see, because there are times where we've not looked capable of turning much of that into productivity, and last night we actually did.
Yeah, that was a rousing win in a way that you don't necessarily get if you don't have the kind of disappointment and frustration and everything that comes from going 2-0 down in the manner we did. It felt quite satisfying. I thought, to be honest with you, Norwich looked a bit like us in a sense, that they lost their way quite easily, couldn't hold on to the ball, couldn't really get a foothold in the game in much the same way we hadn't for the first 20 minutes. As I say, I think the loss of Huang really harmed us. I thought we were particularly dangerous down that left-hand side as well. Ken Semmer and Jamal Lewis, I thought, had a really good game actually against his old club. Got forward lots, put some good balls. I think it was 3 out of 7 crosses he completed.
Jamal Lewis's best game so far?
One of, certainly, yeah. He's growing. I must admit, I was kind of fairly down on him in the early weeks, but he seems to be getting better. And it felt like a lot of the attacks went down that left-hand side. And I looked it up, and apparently 43% went down the left, 35% down the right. It certainly felt like more than that, but you know, can't argue with numbers, can you? But we were really, really quite dangerous. Ken Semmer completed 7 of 13 take-ons, which was more than anyone, had the most touches in the box, attempted and won the most attacking duels, and had the second most progressive runs. I thought he had a really good game for us. Obviously Asprey gets the winner in the end and whatnot, but I think that's turning into a nice little pairing down the left hand side. And this is a complete accident, but one of the questions we had sort of relates to this, so I wonder if it's just worth bringing that question in at this stage.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right, here we go. From Vic Bate, at Bate Vic. What do you do when two most productive wide players, Semmer and Martins, can only play on the left, even if for very different reasons? One can only go down the line and the other can only cut inside. Improvement in Lewis's performances means we can't really play Semmer further back. It's a conundrum, isn't it? We touched on it a little bit the other week, but I just wonder what you guys think about that. How do we kind of get all the right players on, the best players on the field in the best positions at the same time, or can we not?
I think you need to move Martins to the right now.
But then is Asprey playing the best, kind of most consistent football we've seen from him as well?
True, but that means that they have to share that role, don't they? And they're both young, so I think that kind of suits them, because they can both get, you know, maybe not half a game, but 60-40. I would have given Martins maybe more time. Perhaps that's a poor decision from me, because obviously Asprey went on to win the game. But I think they can both work on that right side.
Yeah, see, for me, I think this is one of the issues you have when you have the kind of inconsistent recruitment that we've had over the years. And, you know, maybe we'll start to adjust that. But the fact is, you know, we're in that transitional phase, whether it's, we'll see how it goes. But, you know, you have a left winger who is really a left-sided player. You know, we've seen him on the right-hand side a few times under various managers. It never works out. He's comfortable in that left. He knows the space he's working in. He knows how to attack his right back, and he just looks the best there. But obviously, it does result in a much different sort of build up, sort of attack, and sort of delivery. So, you know, in this game, I think clearly we identified, or we felt that we had to get delivery into the box to Rajovic, and I think, you know, Martins would give you something different there. But to me, it always is going to leave a slightly uneasy feeling to have, you know, one of, if not your best players on the bench. You need to find ways to get them on the pitch, and I think the right-hand side is an option, but I do think where he's effective is from that left-hand side, because he wants to get shots on goal. So, you know, it might be a situation of, you might have a horses for courses situation, or you might just kind of have to play the hot hand a little bit, and if one's doing well, you know, the other one's going to be sitting out for a while. It's really tough, but I think this is just a byproduct of having
a multitude of players that aren't all suited towards a particular style of football and a particular shape we're operating in, because they are very different options. Sometimes difference is good, but in this situation, I think we're always going to feel a little bit disappointed if one of Semmer, Martins or Asprilla is on the bench. We're looking at a more kind of shot-heavy player with Martins, so you maybe negate some of Rajovic's qualities there. And I think you could still work it with Lewis on the left. I think you're still going to get crosses into the box if you just make some adjustments. I think in an ideal world, I'd probably still have Martins in over Semmer, because I think he just offers you something different.
Slander.
Look, I like Ken Semmer. I'm a Ken Semmer fan. But in terms of this front line, I know Rajovic has been scoring, but overall production, you know, if I looked at that game last night and you told me that our kind of main method of attack was going to be to whip balls into Rajovic, I wouldn't have thought that he'd score, to be honest with you, looking at the two centre backs he's up against. And honestly, in the air, I think he struggled quite a lot against Bath and Hanley there at the back. It was Duffy, wasn't it? I said Hanley. Just because, you know, he's really good at reacting. And obviously the goal, the header he scored, was kind of a reactive to a deflection. And that's where he really thrives. But in terms of just headering in crosses from, they're whipped in from Cansema's left, you know, I wasn't necessarily expecting to be overly proficient there. But you know, it's a tough one to answer given the difference in terms of the type of player and the kind of profile of the player that we've got at our disposal on that left hand side.
Given Ishmael's propensity for making subs, I would be tempted to say, you know, whatever you do, you start one way, and if it's not working or if one of them's not having a good game, then that should be something that you look to change routinely, because we discussed the fact, I think recently, that they all kind of prefer, or a lot of them prefer, cutting inside rather than going outside. So, you know, shake it up, use them in different ways to open people up or open teams up. Or if you're not having much joy with, say, Ken Semmer on the left, stick him on the right and make him go inside and get the focus, get the emphasis on Lewis going on the outside on the left, and get Ryan Andrews going on the outside. You know what I mean? Like, there's options there, right? I think it can be seen either way, but I would definitely take it as a strength. And you know, they just need to know that they're going to have to kind of share the load a little bit as well between them. Go with the hot hand.
This is kind of the conundrum of our. There's kind of a conundrum of our situation we find ourselves in, though, with the coach, the style of football, the recruitment and so on, because, you know, you look at the way Ismail plays and some of the strengths of the team. He wants to play with inverted wingers. He wants to gain the width from the fullbacks. We have two fullbacks that can play quite a good advanced role. They've got the mobility and they can deliver. You look at Andrews and Lewis, I think they're set up really, really well for it. You know, arguably our best two players, or two of our best players, they like to cut in on the right for Martins, or on his right, Martins likes to cut in, and then Asprilla the same with his left. So you think, you know, you really want to utilise that. That's a really good way to get at the goal, get in the box and cause some difficulty for defenders. But we've got a striker that doesn't really suit that sort of football at the same time. You know, Rajovic is not going to be involved in the build-up. You're playing inverted wingers. You want him to be there to bring those guys into play, you know, almost what we wanted Keenan Davis to do last season. When he doesn't offer that, it leaves you in a difficult situation. But when he's scoring, you're not going to take him out. So you kind of have this half measure of both. And it's a hard one, because then you end up putting Ken in there to compensate, but you kind of lose a little bit of balance in terms of how you're operating. It's very difficult to really come to a proper solution. But I think that is just kind of the lack of cohesion in terms of building that team.
Do you think Martins has the ability to play as the striker?
Instead of Rajovic, I think the problem.
Well, we're mentioning that, you know, you're not keen on Rajovic, and you're mentioning you're trying to get Martins in and keep Semmer where possible. I mean,
I think that it's not even I'm not keen on Rajovic. I think he lacks some. I think his finishing ability and his instincts are kind of a bit of a level above the rest of his game. And, you know, you can take that.
Could be an option.
Kind of a certain distance, and he can be effectively scoring goals. So I'm not going to criticise him. I'm not trying to talk down on him, really. But, you know, Martins, I think, is so effective from that left. I would really preference would be to keep him there. You know, maybe you could argue if you try to keep Asprilla too, you could look at Asprilla in kind of more of a central position. You could try Martins on the right. You could look at these things. But I think it's going to be a case of rotation for quite a while until we find some consistency there and maybe just find something that's working. I think probably now, after that game with the kind of the production we've been getting from Kem and Ken, and obviously Rajovic, we're probably going to stay with that for a little while. But it's one that's probably going to be like that for the whole season. I don't think we'll ever really find ourselves in a situation where we're completely settled and there's not some questions or some good arguments made for a change.
Tom, do you think Ishmael has a better idea now of what his favoured 11 is?
Yeah, I think so. I think, to be honest with you, I think a lot of it was already probably nailed. I think it's probably that midfield three that have come into their own in the last few weeks. Jake Livermore was one who didn't get a look in, essentially, in the first couple of months and has now become fairly indispensable, if not probably one of the first names on the team sheet at the moment. Kayembe moving forward has been a revelation. And then I think that third slot is still probably just about open. But at the moment, it's definitely Ishmael Kone that's winning that battle. I thought yesterday was one of his best games for us. He still had a few moments where he tried to overdo it, you know, tried to take one player on too many when he could have just laid it off, got the pass wrong or whatever. But I thought in terms of carrying the ball and in terms of getting into dangerous areas, getting some shots off, which hasn't always been something we've seen from him, obviously rewarded with his goal, he was really good. So I think that those three are kind of locked down. I think we know that his preferred centre-back partnership is Porteous and Hoot. Lewis is the left-back. The right-backs kind of alternate. And then the last bit to probably nail now, and evidenced by the fact we were just covering it, is the front line. But, I mean, it's, you know, it's one of Rajovic or Bayo up front, and the rest of them kind of rotate anyway. So I don't think we're a million miles off him knowing it. No.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about those three then. And Ishmael Kone was brought into the side, replacing Loser, who didn't have his best game against Leicester City. And as you said there, Tom, he seems to just be getting better and better, although it still has a little mistake in him. But I mean, if you compare the performance of him versus Loser, there's only one winner at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. Kone has got a bit of thrust about him, I think is the best way I can describe it. You know, he wants to get on the ball and either in advanced areas or drive forward with it. He's positive. He is raw. I think you see that sometimes in him, that he makes mistakes that a little bit someone with a bit more kind of few more games in him wouldn't make, more years in him wouldn't make. But I think there's a player there. He's had to kind of do it the hard way because he, you know, was part of last season. He kind of got written off a little bit, but he's got a little bit of oomph about him and a little bit of drive, and I like him. At the moment, that would be my three going forward. I don't have a massive issue with Loser like some people do, but those are the three form central midfielders.
Jordan, what do you make of Kone? He had a great game for Canada recently, and then he's sort of brought that form into the game yesterday.
Yeah, no, I think this is kind of the football we want to see from Kone, and the player we hope we'd see when we watched him in the MLS. You know, you look at the raw traits of the guy, and he's clearly able to carry the ball well. I think the thing with Kone, when he's playing well, he always kind of looks like he's playing in rhythm, and he's just like he's kind of can glide across the pitch at times. He's got that kind of ranginess that we saw in Decore for a while too. But he needs that consistency, and I think too often there was maybe a little bit of hesitation and in his game, and maybe trying to be a little bit too careful and just not playing with freedom, not playing to kind of his instincts. And I think now we're starting to see a little bit of comfort there, and you know, maybe he's been given a little bit. It'd be interesting to see kind of what Ishmael said to him in terms of how he's playing and how he's operating, because he looks to be playing much more like he does for Canada and like he did previously in the MLS, and he had a little bit more of a kind of offensive responsibility and freedom and kind of further positions too. You know, last night he was still able to carry that ball. He still played it out wide quite a lot, but he was also able to get on the edge of that box, and you know, obviously we saw the goal, but he was more influential, and I think we need to kind of give him that freedom to grow a little bit. I think he kind of looked like a player that was getting minutes, but not necessarily in the way that's going to help him kick on. So I'm hoping now that we start to see that, because it's, you know, when he's on his day, he looks, or especially last night, which I do think was his best performance for us, he looks like an instant starter. So really positive for him. Yeah, I'm pleased, because he's one that, you know, he kind of started the season quite poorly. And obviously quite a few people were questioning if he was really ever going to kind of make it into that team, when you look at the players that we had available in front, you know, like Imran Loser, for example. And now it kind of seems like most people probably settle on on Kone starting ahead of Imran. So, yeah, good for him. Really good for him.
Yeah. And Jake Livermore, he was named as Sky Sports Man of the Match yesterday. Jordan, how dependent are we on him now? He seems like he's come from nowhere to being basically one of the first names on the team sheet, which is very surprising. But, I mean, he was basically running the show in midfield yesterday. It was just really, it was just fantastic to watch. We haven't had a player like that for a while. And he's really starting to, I don't know if it's just, he's just fit now. If he's got to full fitness, and maybe we're seeing the best of him or what, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think we've really simplified that role. You know, it's not the same position we saw Sirianni operating in. It's much more of a traditional defensive midfielder, you know, number six, has sat there to be that shield, recycle possession, you know, just allow you to be a little bit more secure in transition and kind of give you that foothold defensively. So we've really simplified it. He does that well. You know, we're not asking too much of him in possession. We're not asking for too much tempo, too much range. Just play simple, support, let the you know, kind of more talented players in front of you play, and kind of be that insurance. And, you know, I think in this sort of game, he gives you a lot of presence there. I think against a better team, we're going to see him against some better teams. I'd be interested to see if he can kind of maintain that. I don't think his role will be as influential, but, you know, in terms of what we've asked him to do, I think the character has really shown through in his recent games. You know, the intangibles and kind of using that as a justification to sign a player can be questionable, especially if we don't, you know them ourselves personally and kind of have a read on the room you're bringing them into. Clearly that was a part of him signing, but I think the fact that he's been able to get involved and not just be that guy, not just be the dressing room guy, but actually have a tangible impact on the field has been really good to see. So he's getting a lot of credit right now, which is, I think, deservedly so. It is still a position I think we have to, you know, obviously long term, you've got to be looking at kind of options going forward. And I think it's still the role that we've got to define in the team, or Isma has to define going forwards too. But, you know, in the immediate, I think Jake Livermore's kind of taken the chance and done everything you could really ask of him up to now.
Yeah. Tom, you've been
ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Impressed with Jake?
Yeah, really have. I thought he was unfairly kind of written off when we signed him just because of his age, and people were saying, oh, you know, West Brom didn't want him, why should we? But I was reading on Twitter recently, or listening to a podcast or something, and people were saying, you know, he's very, very well thought of at West Brom, actually. He's been, I think, exactly what we needed in there in terms of a stopgap. You know, don't want to see him in there forever because obviously he is old and he's got his limitations. But as Jordan said, in terms of that kind of simplified role, you know, he's done it. He's done it really, really well.
It's unlikely he'll be here next season, right?
I wouldn't rule it out. Certainly wouldn't rule it out. I think he's naturally fit. And I think because he came through, I'm going to look this up now in the meantime, so excuse me. I think because he came through kind of fairly late at Spurs and was kind of one of those players that was on the periphery for a while, I think you probably find that he hasn't played an insane amount of football for someone who's 34. You know, he had a lot of kind of loan spells. It was only really when he went to Hull eventually on a permanent basis that he became a regular. Obviously played a lot at West Brom, but I bet, I'm just looking it up now, 475 career appearances, so a decent amount of football. But you know, 34, he's not played kind of 600 games is what I'm saying, so he's only 125 games off. Anyway, point being, I think he'll probably be here next season if Ishmael is, because Ishmael likes him and you need those leaders, as I've said before, and that will probably be written on my gravestone, on my headstone. But he's no frills, he's no fuss, he's not very spectacular, but he understands the role and he does what is expected of him, and you can never have too many of those players.
Watford managed 21 shots with 9 on target, which is, you know, stats that we don't see that often. Perhaps more likely to see it at home, but even then, it was quite spectacular. Is that anything that we improved, that we did differently, or was it because Norwich were a weaker opposition? Not as weak as Rotherham, it has to be said. I mean, you know, they certainly showed more than them, but did we do something differently?
Yeah, we do get shots away. I think the fact we got a few on target is nice. That can obviously be our issue at times. I think, you know, we still don't create as much inside the box, but we are willing to take shots from outside the box. Obviously, the Kone goal was a successful version of that. But I think Norwich started to sit back quite deep. You know, I'm happy for us to kind of pepper their goal a little bit, take some opportunities and have a go. Look, there was a clip in, I'm not sure we saw, I can't remember where it was, if I saw it on Twitter or something. There's a clip of a little bit of the practice session during the week, and you know, Ismail's kind of preaching about getting a shot away and kind of not overplaying and just get the shot away like Ken did against Swansea. And I think you kind of see that a little bit more in the game. And, you know, I talk about Kone having a little bit of freedom. I think that kind of comes from that too. It really feels like there's some adjustment made there with him in particular. But, you know, also just kind of the taking a chance, you know, having a go, because, you know, mistakes happen at this level, obviously. And there's also kind of a level of chaos that comes with these shots from outside the box, deflections. And, you know, even the Wesley Hoot, even the Asprilla winner comes of a Wesley Hoot shot outside the box, you know. So I do think we are kind of being let off the hook a little bit when it comes to going forwards and giving us some more of a license to take risks, and I think that's needed, because we were in danger of looking a bit too under 21 in how we played. You know, did lots of passing around, lots of control at times, but not really kind of having that final kind of raising of the gear to push on and take a risk and actually try and get through and score, because too often we're kind of, you know, just keeping it around the box and not really posing much threat. So I think if you've got a striker like Rajovic too, you need to find different ways to get him involved. He's not going to slip in behind. So if you're looking at deflections, you're looking at you know, him thriving off mistakes to put goals away, and that's kind of what you're looking at. And you even really saw that in his goal with the deflection off the cross too. So just a little bit more intent, I'd say.
I think for me it was twofold. It was that they started making all the mistakes we were making in terms of giving the ball away and what have you, and as Jordan said, kind of quite deep, and didn't, you know, evidently we're trying to weather the storm and get away, you know, hold on to the lead or get away with something. The other thing was we actually just had some shots from distance, and I tweeted it at the time. You know, George Long looked iffy. There was a shot fairly early on from Jamal Lewis, I think. We're 2-0 down at this point, but Jamal Lewis, I'm pretty sure it was, had the shot, and he pushed it kind of out awkwardly to Kone and Kayembe, and neither of them could quite squeeze it home. And then 2 minutes later, Kone scores from kind of a similar sort of position, or similar sort of distance, I should say. And I thought, you know, we actually kind of tried not walking the ball in the net for once. We only had 4 shots on target inside the box, despite having an XG of...
There's a train.
Oh, well, I didn't even hear that.
Sorry. Did you not?
No.
Just had to shout out the train. We were talking before we started recording, the train's a fan favourite, so we just wanted to give the train the appropriate credit. Unless I'm just hearing things.
Well, either that or my noise-cancelling headphones are cancelling out external noise very well.
Any train confirmation there, Matt? Did you hear that, or am I going crazy?
I'm not certain I heard the train, so...
Oh, my God. All right, well, sorry to interrupt, but in editing, I want it to be, if it is there, just raise the levels a little bit.
And if not, just add a train whistle to make sure it make Jordan happy.
sorry.
That's right. We won the XG battle 2.83 to 1.21, yet two of those goals were essentially kind of close-range goals that you know, very high value chances is what I'm trying to say, which says, you know, we weren't maybe creating great chances, but we were at least getting shots off. And I just think from time to time we just need to be a little bit more adaptive to the situation. And if there's you know, if the goalkeeper's looking iffy, and we've come up against a couple this season, bloody well test him. And we did, and we scored from it. So yeah, that was quite pleasing. More of that, please.
Also, one just looking kind of at some stuff from last night, Norwich's pass map is the thing of nightmares. It's horrible. Have you looked at it? It's just like this.
Oh, I haven't. No. Hang on, let me just bring it up.
Yeah, it's not good. So I think in terms of us getting shots away, you know, we have to, not to put a damper on anything, because we had to kind of get back into that game, but I think Norwich were quite bad. And yeah, obviously that helped us and allowed us to be a little bit more aggressive. But it really interesting to see kind of if we take this to kind of these next few games we have coming up. Obviously Hull's quite difficult in its own way, and yeah, you know, as you said, the fixtures don't look easy on the surface.
Oh wow. That's really bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like a...
I've just pulled it up so I could just see complete kind of U shape. There's not... Basically got no... Never completed a pass centrally from kind of 30 yards plus outside the penalty area. Never got balls into the box or anything.
There's no structure, just a proper Wagner team, isn't it?
Yeah. Is that how his teams play, is it? That's fairly...
If you look really close in the centre, there's a picture of Jake Livermore.
I mean, yeah, fair. I mean, it says something when the assist for the assist for the Sara goal is a pass from sort of just outside the centre circle to 35 yards out. You know, that's not a goal you construct, is it? That's just, you know, complete freak. I don't know if he'll be there much longer, particularly given they've got a new sporting director as well who's not kind of tied to him in the way that Weber was. So yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, very, very strange. I was when we were linked to Wagner a couple of years ago, I was terrified of this sort of thing happening. It's not ideal, but yeah, we'll see. I can't see him lasting there long either. But yeah, obviously, you know, this is again, you know, we talk about Rotherham, we kind of dispatched quite easily 5-0. This one was a tougher one. I think Norwich have a little bit more quality in there in places, but you know, not the classic Norwich side you're thinking of playing. However, you know, the goals we did give up, this should have been a game we kind of won relatively comfortably. So yeah, let's see if we can kind of take it into a new environment with Hull, which is, you know, in theory you're going to be a much different opponent.
Cool, nice one. I think we're going to move on to some questions now. We put a shout out for some of those. Do you want to take us through those, Tom?
Yeah, we'll do. So we answered Vic's already, but from Ed J at Somerset Hornet, a lot has been said recently about Val's tactics and subs. What is your view on whether Watford are a work in progress, building a project, or a team in transition, chopping and changing patterns and tactics? Also, thoughts on Porteous now. I think we've kind of covered him. And why are Martins and Healy not playing? So essentially, where are we kind of at under Ishmael at this stage? And why are Martins and Healy not playing?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of where we are, I still think that I think with Ben Manga being sacked, you know, we're kind of moving into another phase of, well, that's kind of trying to establish what the plan is. I think it's difficult to assess. I think Ismail has his ideas in terms of what he wants to achieve. I think he's trying to mix that in with a squad that he's inherited, which isn't, you know, necessarily built towards what he's trying to do. He's trying to find that balance. He's made some adaptation. I feel less confident we're in a transitional phase phase four with a real plan in mind than I did at the beginning of the season. We kind of started to see some elements of the type of style of play we were looking for and the recruitment we were kind of trying to go towards. It's fallen by the wayside a bit, and we feel a little bit more in the now in terms of how we've adapted our style of play. It remains to be seen what we'll do in the summer, obviously, or even in January to kind of correct things and maybe give us more of a chance this season. But I'm really uncertain in terms of what our long-term goals are now and kind of what our route or our kind of perceived route to progression is. It's really a difficult one to judge. But I guess maybe get your guys' take on that before we answer the Martins part of it. Or Healy?
I think we're on a path, aren't we? It feels like we're on a path. I suppose you're always on a path one way or another. It just might be your path to a dead end. But I think we've kind of had that clear out with Manga going. We've had the clear out in terms of the squad and, you know, reduce the age, reduce the salaries, etc. So, yeah, I think we're a little bit of a team in transition and a little bit of a project. But I think he's stuck quite kind of firmly to one system and kind of style of play, albeit with some tweaks. But it's not like he's kind of torn it all up and started again. You know, we've changed that kind of number six role, as you said. Fullbacks aren't kind of coming inside in the same way that they were at the start of the season. But that's good. You'd rather that than kind of sticking grimly to something that just isn't working. So, yeah, I feel fairly optimistic. I've seen kind of some debate about whether Ismail should be under pressure, should get sacked. I don't feel that way personally at all.
What is he trying to achieve? Like, what is that route now? Because, you know, beforehand, at the beginning of the season, we saw, you know, an attempt to kind of play a little more possession-based football, play a little bit of a higher tempo, more control, incisiveness in the final third. And it felt like we were, you know, a few positions off making that tick properly. There'd be some inconsistency and so on. It kind of feels like now we've made that adaptation to be a little bit more solid, a little bit more defensive, but kind of going back to the kind of more foundational standpoint, what's the progression? Is it a case of them thinking, you know what, we've tried that a little too early, we're going to need a couple windows before we can even really go down that road? Or is it a case of, okay, immediate results are the most important thing, we've got to consolidate? It might be a case of, you know, you're getting a few more draws, you might be, you know, potentially make as many chances, be able to give up less, and just being more pragmatic.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I'd certainly like to think that this is a short-term view
or is it a long-term view? That's what I'm struggling to kind of assess, you know?
I think by short-term, I mean probably not this season. I can't see them doing enough business in January to suddenly give him the personnel that he needs to go and play the way he wanted. Can you? I think, you know, it'll be next summer, and that's assuming he's still here at that point, of course. The you know, always the issue.
Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering if we still have that plan in mind. Yeah. Still think that's the ultimate goal, is to go more towards that style or not? Really, that's kind of what I'm curious to see, and I think we'll be reading off the indications we get. But
yeah, no, definitely, and I think the inference has always been in what the club has said and backing him with the new contract that they kind of back him to follow through on a proper plan and an identity. But I guess ultimately there is always a temptation, isn't there, to do what's necessary to hold on to your job. There's no point being the guy with the philosophy and the plan and everything if you get kind of cut off mid journey. So yeah, I guess we're going to see in the next couple of windows, aren't we?
And then I guess the other part of the question was in regards to Martins and Healy, wasn't it?
Yeah, for me, I think we kind of touched on Martins. I think he's been a bit unlucky recently because he's been one of our better players this season, and he just clearly doesn't fancy him, doesn't he? I think he's not built to do or has the kind of skill set to do the job that he wants from his strikers.
Why do you think that is? What skill set does Healy have, and why is that not suited to how we're playing currently?
I mean, look, I don't know personally, because I think what Healy does offer you is in my mind something we have been lacking. You know, he's able to carry the ball a bit. He plays with a tempo. He's quite aggressive. You know, he'll run channels, but he'll also get on the ball, he'll run at the box, he'll get shots away. Much different forward to what we really have in a lot of ways. He can still play in that kind of slightly poacherish role. But the thing is, I had this kind of conversation a little bit during the week, and in regards to Rajovic in particular, but also the, you know, other options we have. And I don't think that not many teams that are successful at this level really play, or even, you know, levels above, play with a striker like Rajovic. You know, someone's just going to put the ball away, and that's kind of the majority of their job. Not unless you're a team that creates a high level, consistently high level of chances per game, that are good quality chances that you can really rely on just that one striker just to kind of finish it off. Because, you know, most of the time, defenses are much better. Teams are much better at defending and kind of playing through those transitions, that they're able to kind of negate those players mostly. And you have to kind of look to spread offensive threat around a little bit, and you know that's where you kind of start to see more of an evolution of more attacking wingers that are kind of with more of a purpose of scoring rather than just supplying. And I think we had, there you go,
we had it that time.
Yeah, had it that time. I think we also have that in, we have that quality in, maybe not abundance, but we have a decent level of those sorts of players in those wide positions. So, you know, when you have those guys, you kind of think you've got two options to support them. Either you have a more traditional target man that we've seen Ismail use before, someone that's able to be mobile, run the channels, but also bring others into play. We don't really have that, but what Healy can do is he can occupy some of those positions. He can get wide, you know, he can draw space for those wingers to attack, and he's able to hurt teams in a different way, whereas Rajovic doesn't really do that. We even saw last night, you know, I think it was actually one of his better games for us, for number nine, but I think he still showed, you know, a couple of times he'd get the ball and kind of get caught up a little bit, or you know, he'd get a touch and he'll lay it off, and it takes him two passes to kind of give it away out of his feet. It's a tough one. I can't really give you a good answer as to why Healy's not being fancied at all. I go back to the recruitment a little bit. You know, this isn't a Manga guy. It's not a Giretta guy. It's a Graham Younger guy. Is it another example of signing a player that wasn't particularly wanted by the coach or needed by the coach? I don't entirely know, but I am surprised he's not getting minutes. And, you know, even after the last game against Rotherham, I thought at least his introduction, his appearance, we got to see a little bit of what he can offer, and he, you know, kind of came up with the assist, and they probably should have had an opportunity to score himself. So confusing, a little bit frustrating, because I think we've got a decent player there. It's just not being utilised at all.
I agree. Next question, is that from Douglas, Tom?
Yes, that's right. Douglas_Watford. Why do you think Ismail was so certain on having a target man poacher type striker for his system when our best wingers are inverted? Surely an advanced forward that can get in behind and help with the build-up play would have been more suitable for what he's trying to implement.
Kind of tags into what we were just talking about, isn't it, really?
I think you're talking about that kind of advanced forward role. You know, that's kind of what you're looking at in terms of Healy, and I think that's a way of doing it. You know, you kind of create fluidity. If you have someone that's mobile but still has pace, is able to get into those positions, you allow Martins to drift inside and even occupy that striker position at times. Same with Espria. You know, we've seen they both got quality in terms of getting shots away. Espria, you know, still needs some refinement, but even the way he took his goal last night, he has ability to be effective in those places, in those areas. And, you know, I think a target man can do it in a different way. I think you're kind of looking at someone that can drop deep, and you know how we saw, you know, the way we even saw Troy Deeney do it for us for a while, where he kind of drop into almost like a false, like a target man operating in like a false nine position. You come deep, draw in defenders, you pick up that space, you almost play as a number 10 at times just to pick up that ball and then allow those wingers to get narrow, get into those positions, get between the centre back and the full back, if not between the centre backs themselves, and that's where you start to really find that threat. And you know, as he identified there, we have got those players at our disposal. Even the likes of Tom Ince, you know, he's someone that can be effective in those positions too. And it goes back to our discussion in regards to Ken Semmer's position on the left, and are you then kind of minimising some of the threat we could pose elsewhere? And it's a tough one, but I do kind of feel that it is still this issue that comes about from inheriting a team that's kind of a little bit half measured and not really built over a number of years to provide a certain style of play.
I wonder if there was an element of his sides have always had quite a big kind of target man, as we know, and that's what we expected, and then upon getting here, you know, thought, okay, yeah, that's going to work, and then over time, you know, he has had to adapt slightly how we play and the side the wingers play on and so on and so forth. I'm not excusing it, but there's such a disconnect, isn't there, between the striker we signed and the way our wingers are best utilised, that you do wonder. It makes you wonder, certainly. I would be hopeful that we're looking at striking options in January still. Maybe getting Healy off the books and using that to, you know, free up the cash to bring in, or the salary at least, to bring somebody in.
Because we're certainly less direct than his teams have been previously in terms of utilising that target man. You look at, obviously at Barnsley, even West Brom, you know, that target man was there because that transition was so quick. Often it was back to front, you know, vertical football. You needed that body to do that.
Yeah. Oh, by far. Well, that's it. We couldn't do it even if we wanted to, could we? Because Rajovic is not that. He might have a big body in the sense of he's long, but he's, you know, he's about as physically imposing as Peter Crouch, really, isn't he? Like, he's not that sort of Carlton Morris, you know, at Barnsley, Carlin Grant at West Brom, physically strong, can back into defenders, hold the ball up. He hasn't got the technical ability. Even yesterday, you know, second touch was a tackle more often than not, wasn't it? You know, I don't mean that disrespectfully, because he's got that knack of, he's a bit of a modern day Scott Fitzgerald almost, isn't he? Just bigger. Just in the right place at the right time, and he puts his chances away, but forget it in terms of anything else.
I think he's the perfect impact sub. You know, if you're losing and you need to switch how you're playing, you bring Rajovic on and you start pumping balls in the box. But you don't want to play with him from the start, really, do you? Not in an Ishmael setup.
But I just question if you'll get production out of him. In terms of just, you know, turnover of goals, I question if we're going to be able to consistently provide him with opportunities to score and justify his place. But look, I mean, again, I'm not trying to, people are enjoying the fact we've got a striker that's scoring goals. I'm not trying to put a dampener on that. I just think that if we're talking about kind of long-term progression of the team, the striking options we have are just so, you know, I think it's a good question, because they're not necessarily kind of set up to support the better elements of our team. I just don't think you see many teams at the kind of top levels play with a striker like Rajovic and kind of have consistent success. So maybe we'll find a way to do it. But right now, it does seem we're a weird team. We're a very strange team. Is kind of where I put it down to. We're a weirdly built, weirdly structured team, and I think Ismail's trying to make the best of it. And I get the feeling he's still trying to establish how to do so.
Rajovic was his man, though, wasn't he? I mean, that's who he chose.
He said,
"This is the guy that's going to do it for me."
Was he? I don't know, though, Matt.
Well, okay, we don't know that. He said it, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he said, yeah.
Look, he said it, and, you know, I think so. Well, I think he said that he passed the final, like he had a say on it, right? Like but we also know that he was a Giurietta signing. This wasn't a Ben Manga suggested player, which, you know, initially was concerning, because, you know, theoretically Manga and his team were in control of you know, putting together a squad over the next few windows that goes towards the football that the head coach is trying to play, using their kind of their targets they had put together already, but also, you know, kind of, you know, scouting around these kind of more favorable leagues to find these players. And, you know, I think that it's not necessarily that Ismail didn't appreciate some of the qualities he had, but I'm not saying he's lying either. I just don't know if it doesn't really fit kind of what I feel like he wants from a striker. Does that make sense? I know it sounds like I'm just disagreeing with the guy himself, but I just nothing in the Rajovic deal suggests to me an Ismail signing. It feels like it was kind of advertised, or like it kind of seems that Giurietta was the one that was in control. As we know, he was a Giurietta signing.
No, I can go along with that.
I don't know. I'm not overly sure on that. Does that make any sense? I feel like that sentence didn't really make much sense in my mind. I'm trying to say it. But, you know, as the question was pointing out, you know, he's not that kind of more advanced dynamic forward. He's not a target man. He's a poacher. I don't know that anyone looks at this team and sees, oh, okay, we're lacking just that poacher just to kind of convert on these high quality chances we're making. I don't particularly see that personally.
I think even yesterday, the goal he scores, it's a deflection on the cross, isn't there, which takes it away from George Long, takes it over his head, and he's completely unmarked about a yard out on the line. So, you know,
it's a reactive instinctual finish, which is what he's good at. But
yeah, that's it. It's not like it was a bullet header or anything like that, you know. I don't want to sound like I'm digging out a bloke who does score goals, but you know, the history of football says that players like that just score goals have been kind of out of fashion, you know, eradicated almost, but certainly gone out of fashion over the years, and with good reason. And yeah, he just doesn't look like a Ismail signing at all. I have a very hard time believing that he, you know, he would have been kind of, yes, get him in. Probably more likely the case that they offered him Rajovic, and okay, it's kind of him or nobody. So okay, fine, we'll do it. But yeah, we'll never know.
I think also too, you know, if you were asked a question by the press, I think he was. I'd be interested if we can try and dig up that line of questioning there, because you know, if you're asked by the press, who was this? And I know there was some level of questioning around that was pretty consistent at the time. You know, it was kind of a question we were all curious about.
Mm.
It'd be pretty brutal of him to say that he had no interest in the player and so on. So, I I think he kind of is a little bit obligated to say he had final say on it, or he liked it. And again, how much time does... I don't know. I'm not saying he doesn't, but how much time does Ismail have to sit down and watch Rajovic play? If he's being presented this player and he's been given information on him, he's been shown some footage, but is he really sitting down watching 10-15 games of Mileta Rajovic? I don't know. So I feel like it's probably a situation of this is a deal that's been presented to him. Other factors at play in terms of, is he someone we can actually get our hands on now? Oftentimes it's not the player you like the most, it's a player you can get. So I don't know, we'll see. But again, I don't think he's a perfect fit. Let's see what we can do with him. I'm curious to see kind of what the method will be.
Final question from Nick Lansing at Toast Haiku. General question for the next pod: how do professional coaches and players communicate? Is English the default language? Is it the league's native language? I've always wondered how a bunch of players from across the globe can play together. I think it's a very interesting question, and very prescient very pertinent, I should say, at Watford, where we have had since the Pozzo regime started, quite a multicultural dressing room. I have never been in an environment in a football environment that is that multicultural, but I think I'm right in saying, and Jordan, obviously jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, that it kind of depends case by case, right? A lot of clubs, you have, certainly in this country, you know, try and dominate with or mainly speak English, but you always get cliques that kind of speak a certain language. You might have a translator that helps. But I think English across kind of Europe, at least, and probably wider, is also quite a popular language, regardless of whether it's the native language of that country, or, you know, not native, but a popular language in that country anyway.
Yeah, I mean, generally, in my experience, there's a lot of translation going on from players too, you know, multilingual players that are there to help with that. Yeah, I mean, look, you probably just by the fact that it's could be the most spoken language, you know, around, you're going to have a lot of English being spoken there. You know, I think at Watford it's fluctuated a lot. There was a time where it was a lot of French, you know, obviously you've had some Italian at times too, but a lot of these guys are speaking multiple languages as well. But you know, overall communication from the coach, probably, especially with his coaching staff, you're probably gonna be hearing a lot of English, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of French in there too. And you know, as Tom says, it's very, very situational, but there have been lots of times, you know, that I've seen where it'll be players that are having to communicate to their teammates and translate for the coach as well. So, you know, it's a factor, and it can be complicated. And oftentimes I try and mitigate that by, you know, visual cues and simplifying things where they can. But, you know, if you had to make an assessment or a judgment call based on this current squad, I think you're probably looking at the majority in English with a little bit of French and so on in there as well.
Did either of you manage to catch the video that Watford put out on the head coach mic'd up?
No, I didn't.
That might have been where I saw a clip of him telling the players to take shots more often. I'm not sure if it was a clip. Yeah. Okay, it was, yeah.
So they put that out, and he was mostly speaking in English, but he also threw some French words in there as well. Yeah.
I think the good thing about having so many coaches that have coached across Europe and you know, what different kind of cultures and whatnot, is they're all fairly quite... They're certainly a lot better than English coaches in terms of being multilingual, right? You know, Gianfranco Zola, I think I'm right in saying, used to speak several languages around the training ground if needs be. I think, was it Elman Abdi who spoke something like six languages when he was here? That was the kind of last era that I was around the training ground with any frequency. Marco Cesarini, who was physio or head of medicine or something like that when he was here, was kind of de facto translator for a lot of the Italian players, and Beppe Sanino when he was here, because obviously that's a factor as well. He came and could barely speak English, and I can attest to that because I used to go and have to interview him at the training ground from time to time. Daniel Poodle was translator for Matti Vidra, Forestieri, who didn't speak Italian, who obviously spoke Italian but didn't speak a huge amount of English. So I think that, you know, it's kind of horses for courses at each club, isn't it? That's it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Walter Mazzari barely grasped the English language, but then Roy Hodgson spoke several languages, so, you know.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Hodgson, one of the kind of outliers in that respect in terms of being an Englishman that can be bilingual, multilingual. Certainly not.
But if you live for 250 years, you should be able to pick up a few languages along the way as well, I think.
Yeah, not a great coach for us, though, but seemingly still able to do it.
That's us.
Right, well, thanks very much for that. I think we're called time on that one. A bit of a longer pod this week, but then we are covering two games. And also, we had a bit more to talk about in terms of celebrating. So, you know, we always like to make the pods a bit longer if there's some excitement involved. Tune in next week for our coverage of... He looks quickly down at his phone to see who we're actually playing at the week.
Hull away.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Okay. Well, a bit of a surprising one, that, actually, isn't it, Hull? No one really expects them to be up there at the minute. A bit of a reunion as well with Tufan. What do you think about Hull?
Tough. It's a tough one to go to, actually. I think, you know, they've actually been fairly productive and offensively quite sound. You know, a team that I think you look at when we played them last year and you could see kind of the embers of what they were trying to do. They've actually kind of developed quite nicely. They're able to be a little bit more kind of dominant in possession, play pretty much similar shape to us, you know, 4-2-3-1. Got quite a lot of threat in the forward positions. Scott Twine's there, obviously, as well. He's been quite good. Sarri in midfield has also been quite good still. One that I hope we were kind of maybe into a little while ago, but never quite really picked up. But they've got some interesting players that they've put together quite a nice little squad. And I think if you look at that starting 11, maybe lack a little bit in depth, but they've got something kind of quite interesting going there. So, they had a few signs, obviously Vinegar as well that came in, Jack Greaves, like all these guys that are starting to pick up a little bit of form, and they've put it together quite nicely. So quite impressed with Hull, and I'm curious to see how we come up against them.
Well, a Watford victory would mean we'd only be 3 points away from them, which is quite incredible considering the start of the season we've had. But good stuff. Let's see if we can pick up those points and continue the run that we've restarted for ourselves. That's it then. Just a few things to say before we finish, and that is, if you wanted to give us a review, please head along to iTunes, find us there, go down to the bottom and give us a rating out of 5. We'd very much appreciate it. Really helps with the statistics to get more Watford fans along following us and finding us. Also a big thanks to everyone that follows us on Patreon as well. Really appreciated. Thank you very much for doing so. If you want to join them, you can find us on Patreon, Watford Buzz Podcast. And then on Twitter, give us a follow at Watford Pod, at Messi Messiano, at TB Bidell, at Jordan Weimer, and we'll be more than happy to chat all things yellow, black and red with you. And there's the train.
Train signing off.
We've mentioned it a few times today, and that was a nice little way to finish. Yeah, great one for train fans. All right, then.
Catch you next time.
We've been the Watford Buzz. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.